This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll chat with NOLA socialite and promoter Larry Moreau about his book, All Bets on Me. And later in the show, Jessica Rosegard checks in with Cityscapes columnist Richard Campanella. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans, but first...
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this great arena, Durham, North Carolina, the heart of the Research Triangle. We've come to this particular place tonight because we got to look at things from every angle. We need some answers to some complicated questions if we're going to get it right. To that end, we have here gathered some of the most expensive scientists.
Randy Newman is a multiple Oscar, Grammy, and Emmy winner through his mini albums, movie scoring, and more. His latest album is entitled Dark Matter. He'll be appearing at the Orpheum Theater here in New Orleans on Tuesday, December 12th. WWNO's Paul Mawson spoke with him about his music and time in the Crescent City.
Randy Newman, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
It's important to note that you lived in New Orleans, obviously. You're born in Los Angeles, but then you moved to New Orleans with your mother and spent...
Very young.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember any of that?
I remember when I was like three years old, a few things. I mean, I remember the Court of Three Sisters for some reason.
Going in the courtyard, right?
Yeah. And I remember the river being kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. So you were here till you were like 11 then, right? Somewhere around there?
I was here till I was like three, and then I'd go back in the summers till I was about 11.
Oh, that's it.
My mother's family's back is down there.
And of course, you're a Dixie Flyer. Was semi-autobiographical, can we say?
Yeah, it's sort of true. It's the song says I was born right here, which is Los Angeles, November 43. That's true, unfortunately. Born right here, November 43. Then it's about coming to New Orleans on the Dixie Flyer, which never existed really. And there you are. I think I can't remember the lyric if I'm not playing. I just launched out into it there and thought, well, I'll remember it, and I didn't.
to New Orleans, the land of dreams.
The land of dreams, yeah. Back to her friends and her family in the land of dreams.
Got on the Dixie Flyer, bound from New Orleans, across the state of Texas to the land of dreams. On the Dixie Flyer, New Orleans, back to her friends and her family in the land of dreams.
I heard you say you like to write in character.
I do.
Yeah, and what do you mean by that when you talk about that?
I mean that the singer of the song doesn't have to be a protagonist, and it doesn't have to be in first person. Like, I'll write about people who are not myself. Write about someone who is, I hope, considerably worse than myself or than the audience. You know, songs are, you know, 90% of songs that are written are sort of romantic or heroic. The singer of the song is sort of a hero, but in mine, they're not.
So to kind of jump off that point, like Good Old Boys, when you get the New Orleans reference again, which is, you know, the song's about Huey Long, which is Kingfish and Every Man a King. Would those fall into that category, right?
Yeah, it's more obviously so. It's Huey Long singing, and he's making a stump speech, saying there's 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans. In New Orleans, there are Frenchmen everywhere. Your children could drown, your house could fall down. Would none of those Frenchmen care? Slight exaggeration on what his stump speech might have been, but he certainly ran a campaign where it was, you know, the country, up country against the city. And the powers of the city, he ran against the government in Baton Rouge also.
Who gave a party at the Roosevelt Hotel? Back the whole North half the state down there for free. People in the city had their eyes bugging out, 'cause everyone looked just like me. Here comes
obviously, you know, we lost Fats Domino recently.
I know.
And I know you were a big fan of his. What is it about Fats that, you know, resonated with you?
There was a joy in it, consistently so. It made me smile to hear him. And he went to the right places for me. The music felt good. Well, it sounds so ridiculous to say it, but it's like Haydn. You know, he goes along, and Haydn goes to the best places. You can't, they're a little better than you would think of. The same is true of Fats Domino, really. I mean, they go where the music should go. And it's a very pleasing kind of thing for me to hear Fats Domino. Everything he did with some grace. It's beautiful. I really loved him.
Well, you know, obviously, you're very successful on record. You know, Little Criminals, all those albums, great albums. And then you made this jump into movie music. A very impressive list. You know, Toy Story, obviously. The Natural, Ragtime. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty wide body of work. And you like to
it
work
is.
With...
I got typecast doing animation in the last 20 years or so, in a way. But I've done a lot of different kinds of pictures.
And you like working with an orchestra, don't you?
Do you
enjoy that? Yeah. What is it about working with an orchestra that just works for you?
Because it's a privilege to work with people that have spent so much time getting good at what they do. And they spend so much time that they're really good at it, you know? And it's a pleasure making music with them. Just like it is with playing with Blake Mills or Matt Chamberlain, David Pilcher, the guys I played with in the band, Mitchell Froom, for this last record. It's a real privilege playing with great musicians. Playing with an orchestra is the joy of my life, pretty much. It's the best times I have, and I love it.
Well, we always enjoy having you back here in New Orleans, and you'll be at the Orpheum on December the 12th.
I will.
Randy Newman, thanks so much for taking some time. We really appreciate
it. Great talking to you. Enjoyed it very much.
And thanks for all your music, all your great music.
Thank you. You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Speaking of friend, the season of giving and gratitude is here, and WWNO is thankful for everyone who donated this year. If you haven't given yet, you can still get a 2017 tax deduction with your donation before the end of the year. You can give online at wwno.org/donate, and thank you. Native New Orleanian and entertainment socialite Larry Morrow is a 26-year-old party promoter who started from the bottom and now he's here. No, really, he's here in studio to talk about his secret to success, which is the premise of his new book, All Bets on Me. Larry, welcome to the show.
How you doing? Thank you for having me.
Folks may recognize your name from a slew of celebrity events around the city, but tell us how you got started with your event production company.
It started off, I did a party. It was me and my friend's birthday, and I think I was turning like 19 or 20. And I decided to rent out this venue. We did a party. I made a lot of money, and I'm like, wow, I can make money doing this. So I just started to run with it. And, you know, it started off just partying, and I was just having fun with my friends, but then it turned into a business. You know, I met JT along the way after I got, like, my feet wet.
And JT is your...
My publicist.
Yes. Okay.
When I met with JT, that's when things started to shift because we came together and we started to create more than just a party. We started to create parties with a purpose. You know, give back to the community, not just make money, but just do a lot of charitable initiatives throughout the year. That's how we got started, and it just grew to something much bigger than just being out and partying with friends. Mm-hmm. Turned into a business.
And it's so easy to fall into that here in New Orleans, a city that always has something going going on, right?
Very easy.
Now, what can you tell us about your childhood and how that kind of shaped you into who you are today?
I would say my childhood taught me to step in the ring of fire, to take risks. I became numb to risks at an early age. And that's because me and my friends used to always gamble. You know, that's kind of what kept us out of trouble. And coming up from like 12 until now.
Now you're saying gamble as in?
Shoot dice.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, we shot dice every day. So we threw around our money amongst each other. Mm-hmm. And somebody would leave with a lot of money. Somebody would go home with no money. But it taught me how to be willing to risk. You know, I was risking money at an early age. It wasn't much, but as I got older, the risk became to be a little more higher.
Yeah, and I imagine that that's mentioned in your book, right?
Yes.
Let's get into this book, because okay. I'm interested in how this happened. You go from promoter to author, and this is your first book. Again, it's called All Bets on Me.
Yep.
What inspired you to even go from throwing parties to doing this book?
Well, throughout my life, I've never been as vocal, and I always wanted to just express myself. And me and JT were sitting down having a meeting one day, and the idea came about. And from that moment forward, we went start making it happen. That same day, we went met with different people to, really make it happen. And that's what we did. Because I never want to just talk about things. If I think about it, we got to go through with it. We got to.
Right. And let's talk about the title, because you mentioned that you were a gambler at a young age. So let's talk about how that coincides with the title.
All Bets on Me come from, like I said, coming up, I gambled. And when I became of age, I started gambling in a casino. And for 2 years of my life, I spent majority of my time in a casino gambling, stressing out, losing money. All the money I was making at the time, I was giving to the casino. So at some point, I'm like, you know what? Let me stop losing all this money in the casino. Let me start gambling on myself. Let me start betting where the odds are more in my favor and not against me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started to invest in myself. So I went from losing money in the casino to making money with the casino. And that's just come from me just, believing in myself and like, you know what? It's time for a change. Let me just go ahead and invest in myself, because that's the best bet anyone could ever place, and that's on yourself.
And you came to that realization fairly quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched over the years coming up, like my mom was a gambler, so I've seen that, but also just gambling throughout my life, like with my friends, it was something that we did for fun. But it also taught me risk. I was able to lose and not be affected by it as much, because if you lose money for the first time, it's different than a person who's lost it a numerous amount of times and become immune to it. So after a while, it just became something that I didn't fear, so I was willing to risk in a casino. I applied those same risks into the field that I was in, the event. So I'll take my money and I'll go invest in Drake. The odds are better than going sit at the blackjack table, but it's still a risk.
Yeah.
Putting money up for an artist, it's not guaranteed to make back, but I also did it for relationships as well.
Yeah. Now, I know folks need to read the book to find out all the keys to success, but could you leave us with one on today?
I would say the importance in relationships. Throughout my journey, it wasn't really the money that helped me get to where I'm at now. It was more so the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, they spend time, worrying about how much money they can make on this event or this and that, or whatever field you may be in. But throughout that whole time, I was trying to build solid relationships, because I know, whether I have it or not, if I have solid relationships or if I lose everything, having solid relationships and building in business can help you in the future, So that was my main thing. And I just would like the readers to focus on the bigger picture, and that's building a solid foundation and relationships,
Right. And those relationships have led you to partner and collaborate with a bunch of celebrities.
Yes.
Could you name a few of them?
P. Diddy, which is I talk about him a lot in the book. He's been a big inspiration throughout my life. Just being a kid and just watching him so much to when I booked him. My mom called me. I'm like, Mom, guess who I got for Essence? She's like, who? I said, P. Diddy. She's like, oh my gosh, Larry, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, Ma, I got him. I said, don't tell nobody anything yet. She's like, why? So she was just so ecstatic. And she's like, does he know he's your idol? I'm like, Ma, I haven't even talked to the man yet. But she was so excited. But from a kid coming up, I watched him and I just watched his moves and everything he's done. But I also worked with Drake. He's one of my favorite artists. Lil Wayne, Chris Brown, Fabulous, Lil Kim. From like TV personalities, Drea, Tahiri, Floyd Mayweather. The list goes on and on. But I've been blessed to be able to work with the people I grew up watching, whether it's from sports to entertainment, whatever it is. But, it's a blessing just to help work alongside of them.
That was Larry Morrow, entertainment, socialite, party promoter, and author of All Bets on Me. You can get your copy of All Bets on Me. The release date is January 9th. Thank you. Time for our monthly check-in with Richard Campanella to discuss his Cityscapes column for NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. This month, Campanella takes us back to Spanish New Orleans when the Lafitte Greenway was a major shipping canal. Here's WWNO's Jessica Rosegard.
Richard Campanella, geographer with the Tulane School of Architecture, is here to discuss his NOLA.com Times-Picayune Cityscapes article titled, Today's Lafitte Greenway was Spanish New Orleans' Carondelet Canal. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Your story begins in the late 1700s. Francisco Luis Hector de Carondelet was the governor of the then Spanish colony of Louisiana. Set the scene for us at that time.
Well, he's a Belgian in service of Spain, so he's a French speaker in a Spanish colony, so Carondelet becomes Carondelet. And he takes control in 1792 in the aftermath of a number of urban changes following the 1788 fire. For one thing, the adjacent Faubourg, which is now the CBD, starts to urbanize. This is also around the time where the Spanish want to centralize food retail for both sanitation and taxation reasons, birthing what is now the French Market. One big problem remained, and it had two manifestations. The problem was water, and one was that there was too much of it, making city streets muddy, and the other was that there was lack of access getting to Bayou St. John and thence to Lake Pontchartrain, where a whole bunch of natural resources were in great demand. So in one fell swoop in June of 1794, Carondelet came up with an idea to solve both of those problems.
And that idea was?
A canal. And Spain approved it but did not fund it. So he marshaled convicts as well as enslaved labor to begin excavating a 1.6-mile straight line from the rear of the city, connecting with what you might think of as kind of the headwaters of Bayou St. John, from which it was 2 miles of Lake Pontchartrain. So the project was done in two phases over the course of 94 and 95, and it was cleared out and opened for business in 1796.
You write in your article that shortly after the canal was opened, Carondelet was sent to Quito, Ecuador. What happened then?
The canal lost its champion and started to sediment and get all weedy and overgrown. After the Louisiana Purchase, a new set of eyes saw value in this. Everyone had a sense that New Orleans was going to boom and it needed construction materials. It needed lake access. So of all people, a Frenchman out of Haiti by the name of James Pito comes up with the idea to kind of reopen a much improved Carondelet Canal. So he forms the Orleans Navigation Company and takes a full 10 years to do the improvements. In 1817, Pitard is successful in reopening this new canal. And so the heyday of this new Orleans Navigation Canal asset is the late 18-teens, the 1820s, and it was doing so well. At any given point, there might be 70 or 80 schooners in there bringing in these resources and making money. This draws the attention of competing entities who also want to crack at that lake trade.
How did that impact the canal?
Well, for one thing, there's a new technology on the horizon. It's railroads. And so Creole investors in the Faubourg Marigny come up with a plan to create a railroad right up Elysian Fields Avenue, and it's inaugurated in 1831, giving even more lake access. Meanwhile, Anglo investors on the American side of town want to do their own connection with the lake, and starting in 1832, the Canal Bank and Banking Company devises plans for a much wider major canal that would become known as the Basin Canal. It opens in 1838, and now the old Carondelet Canal has some serious competition.
After competition and advances in technology, there's always a winner and a loser, and it looks like the old canal wound up on the losing end of that deal.
The company goes bankrupt in the 1850s and reconstitutes as yet a third company, and they give a crack at it. And so it perseveres and remains operating for another 60 or 70 years. By this time, early 1900s, there's even more competition. And this one spells the doom for both of these 19th century canals. And it comes in the form of railroads, which of course are now decades old, but more so trucks, running on new highways, and these trucks increasingly have refrigeration on board. Now you could get shellfish and finfish faster, better, cheaper into downtown markets and beyond without using these ancient old canals.
How did we transition then from the demise of this former canal into what we have today?
Well, by the early 1920s, most city officials and indeed most neighbors had viewed the old Basin Canal as an urban nuisance. And so the city took it upon itself in 1924 to purchasing the right-of-way. And the filling in of the canal bed starts in 1925 and takes into the early 1930s.
Fast forward to just a few years ago, the city had the idea to turn it into something useful.
In fact, citizens had the idea, and it was in the year 2006, which was a heady time for civic engagement right after Katrina. A group of citizens who would become known as the Friends of the Lafitte Corridor came up with the idea to turn this liability into an asset, into a bike path, a greenway, a linear park, and it took the better part of a decade, but with citizens in the lead and government following their lead, just about 2 years ago, the Lafitte Corridor formally opened. It's a beautiful walk. It's a lovely bike trail. But the important thing here is that space that was created for such different purposes involving water is again having its effect involving water today with its bioswales and water retention spots.
And what once used to transport cargo and goods between downtown and the bayou now transports workers.
Workers as well as recreational bikers. It's the least cost minimum distance connection between the mid-city Bayou St. John area and the city proper. I think it's a really neat kind of coming a full circle for this corridor of movement.
Richard Campanella is a professor of geography at the Tulane School of Architecture. His Cityscapes column can be found every month on NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows. And be sure to catch us next week, right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us. Underwriting programming on WWNO New Orleans Public Radio is a great way to support this station, and it's also a very effective way to reach informed, civic-minded, and educated adults in the New Orleans region with information about your business, service, or organization. Find out how WWNO 89.9 FM can help grow your business by emailing underwriting@wwno.org.